It's that time again on a Friday when AM Live presents another update from the coalface with Martin Creamer, publishing editor of Engineering News and Mining Weekly. A very good morning, Martin.
And to you, Kolani.
Well, the world's first flying car is to go on display in New York next month.
Yeah, we've been talking about Terra Fugia now for some time, and now they're actually going to display this car, which can go from car to plane in 30 seconds. And, you know, the situation is you'll have to have a pilot's license and you'll have to have a driver's license, but they've negotiated with the highway authorities, they've negotiated with the aviation authorities, they got the thumbs up on both sides with the materials used, bigger tires, etc. And, you know, once you come down and land at the airport, you fold up your wings and you drive home. And the width of this vehicle is about 2.3 meters if you've got your wings, if you haven't got your wings out, so as a normal car, and about 8 meters then when you give it wings. But interestingly, it uses unleaded fuel. It doesn't need the aviation fuel. You'll have to have a pilot's license, as I say. But it's simply something that looks like very futuristic at the moment. One would think it had needed many more years of discovery. But the Massachusetts Institute of Teen that's developed this through Terra Fugia has now got to the stage where it is usable.
Gee, it is amazing.
The price is going to be something. I think it'll be about 2 million rand. So that could be a bit of a problem. But they're taking deposits on
already
at about 80,000 rand. And that'll be at a show.
I'm just trying to imagine this, eh? You go to the airport and it's like, no, I'm going to use my car. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about SAA or whatever the other airline.
Exactly. But they will be at this New York show. It's the New York International Auto Show, which begins in 28 days.
Amazing. Anyway, South Africa's once booming ferrochrome industry, which employs 200,000 people now, is suddenly under serious threat from China. Worrying issue here, hey?
You know, we've had a fantastic ferrochrome business where we add value to chrome. So this has always been a beneficiated industry. We know that the government is coming in now with beneficiation policies, but this has been going on for many years. So we've got a lot of capacity. But what is happening now is that platinum miners in particular, they are going for UG2 reef, which is a different reef to the Merensky reef. And in that reef is also chrome. So they are ending up with streams of chrome faster than they expected. And they're looking for markets for these. So China, which doesn't have any of its own chrome, is taking our chrome. Their market is on the ascendancy. You know, the 300,000 tons which we were down in South Africa in the ferrochrome business last year, that was the exact ascendancy, 300,000 tons in China. They're getting half of their chrome now from South Africa. India, which was right next door to China, was initially the biggest supplier of chrome to, that's raw chrome, unbeneficiated chrome, to China. But the Indian government stepped in. And they also want to add value at home with a beneficiation process. So they have intervened and they put taxes on the export of the chrome to India. So our South African government now is thinking of doing the same, bringing in as a temporary measure, a breather, a quick intervention, an export tax, just to make that production in China a little bit more expensive. But in the longer term, they want to have a different system, a quota system, where people can earn credits by supplying their chrome into the local South African market, so the value can be added here. And it's going to be part of the whole beneficiation strategy. You know that there are 10 industries with about 5 supply chain areas that are going to be beneficiated, and one of them is this chrome area. And so they are looking before the end of the year, and I think it should come sooner than that, for some sort of tax to be imposed to make it less beneficial for China to get this chrome, and also to then go into a longer term strategy where we can not only keep this big employment level, 200,000 people and contributing about 42 billion rand a year to the GDP, but also try and grow that. There's a potential to grow it. You know, we host most of the world's chrome reserves between ourselves and Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe's already imposed a ban on the export of chrome. So that is an even stronger measure. You know, we haven't really resorted to that, which wouldn't really work with our World Trade Organization membership. But, you know, temporarily bringing in taxes is accepted. And this is what's going to be done.
Speaking of taxes, resources, rent. That's the name of the new tax game confronting South Africa's mining industry, Martin.
Yeah. Resource, rent, tax. Yeah. You know, those three words are on the lips of everybody in mining at the moment because of the latest document that has come through, the ANC document, the State Intervention Mining Study that has been done. It recommends that South Africa moves into a situation of resource rent. So it's saying, look, once the private sector companies get a good internal rate of return, and they're mentioning about 22%, that you get this internal rate of return and you're still earning profits above that. The government is looking for a post-profit participation at a rate of 50%. in terms of the study, of course, it's still a study. It hasn't gone before the government yet. It's just an ANC document, which came against the background of looking into mine nationalization. We had those calls for mine nationalization. So they've come in with this. But the initial studies, and one of the leaders in our mining industry, Michael Solomon, who was the former Wasizwe Platinum CEO and is now with the J&J Group, he thought, well, he'll do an experiment. And so he took a deposit, a South African deposit, an actual deposit. And theoretically, he then added the resource rents to it. So he then took this deposit theoretically and planted it in Australia, planted it in US, planted it in Chile to see how competitive we would be. And with the resource rents, unfortunately, South Africa becomes uncompetitive. Now, with our, even with our royalties, we can see that we're fairly evenly balanced competitively with the rest of the world. But the moment you bring in these resource rents, in fact, if you put that deposit, that theoretical deposit, South African deposit in Australia, the Australians would be half a million rand ahead of us. So it would be a no-brainer. If someone had an opportunity to mine in Australia or South Africa, they would go for Australia. So I think it needs to be carefully worked out, because the intention of the document, the SIMS document, which is a state intervention mining study, is to look after future generations with these rents. In other words, you take this money and you put it in a sovereign wealth fund offshore, and you say, well, you know, once these metals and minerals are taken out of our ground, our future generations aren't going to benefit from this. But if we take some cash now and we put it in that sovereign fund, future generations will benefit. But people are saying perhaps they can use the royalty money for that. SIMS, this document, the state intervention, does want to cut down on royalties, bring them down to 1%. So maybe there is a balance somewhere along the way here. But in the meantime, it seems that these resource rents, this resource rents tax, would make South Africa uncompetitive against the rest of the world.
Certainly, it's an ongoing discussion. There's a lot to come out of this one. Martin Krima, though, we thank you very much this morning. Martin Krima is publishing editor of Engineering News and Mining Weekly. He'll be back with us again at the coalface at the same time next Friday. Have a good one, Martin.
Same to you, Kalani.